Chapter 14. She vanished back into the garden before I could ask her what she meant. She was obviously hatching some plan, but it was never going to happen. Mum had enrolled me at the high school in Farnsbury before we'd even moved. It was supposed to be really good, miles better than my old school, but I was still dreading it. I'd found it hard enough when I started Year 7, and everyone was new. This time, I'd be the only new girl. Mum was already home when I got in. She was sitting at the table in her nightie, doing the puzzle. I was so relieved to see her. I rushed over and hugged her tight. She was still wearing her furry boots. But when I asked her why, she looked down, surprised, as if she hadn't even noticed she had them on. I made her a cup of tea, and we chatted for a bit, just about the weather and the washing up. She was trying to fit a tiny piece of red into the field of poppies, but her hand was trembling slightly, and she couldn't quite work out where it should go.
"I don't know why Stella bought me such a difficult puzzle," she said,
tapping the tiny piece on the table over and over, until I reached across and took it away from her. "I'll just make a start on the dishes," I said. "And then why don't we sit down together with the paper and have a look through the job section?" Mum shrugged.
"I've already looked, Becky. There's nothing in there. Nothing."
She glanced up at me for a second, but her eyes were flat, as if someone had switched the lights off. I got up anyway and put on Mum's apron. It was red and white with a frill round the edge, and way too big. It was difficult to know where to start. The kitchen hadn't been cleaned properly for days, and it was a state. I moved a pile of plates to one side to make some space by the sink, and noticed a white big envelope tucked behind the toaster. "What's this?" I asked, holding it up to show her. Mum turned round. "No idea," she said vaguely. "It must have arrived earlier while I was out." She turned back, blushing suddenly, as if she'd just realised she was still in her nightie and that I wasn't supposed to know she'd been out in the first place. Inside the envelope there was an invitation to little Albert's christening. It was printed on thick cream card, with two tiny blue feet in the middle, and a silky blue ribbon at the top. I read it out to Mum. "Julie and Robin would love you to attend the christening of their son, Albert Jonathan Jackson." Robin was Mr. and Mrs. Jackson's son. He lived about half an hour away, but they decided to have the christening at Oakbridge Church.
"I'm not going,"
said Mum, when I'd finished reading out all the details. She was animated suddenly, her eyes flashing. "But we've got to! Mr. and Mrs. Jackson will be really upset. It's their first grandchild, and they're so excited."
"I don't care. I don't even know Julie and Robin. I've only met them once. Why can't people just leave me alone?"
"What do you mean?" She was getting worked up, clenching and unclenching her fists.
"That's why I left in the first place. Everyone's staring. Everyone knowing. How was I supposed to carry on?"
"Everyone knowing what? You're not making any sense. Please, Mum, everyone knowing what?" She breathed in deeply, closing her eyes.
"I'm sorry. Becky, really, I'm so sorry. I only meant everyone knowing my business, that's all. But I'm not going to the christening. I really don't want to. And that's that."
I knew she wouldn't change her mind either. She was as stubborn as Rosa May when she wanted to be. I turned back to the sink to start the washing up. It was getting harder and harder to imagine how Mum was going to sort herself out. She'd been low before. There were times in our old house when she'd moped about in her dressing gown for a few days, or put herself to bed for the weekend with a migraine, but I'd never seen her as bad as this. I wasn't sure whether to leave her by herself the next morning. I was scared she might wander off again, or do something stupid. She was so out of it. I was still in the kitchen, deciding what to do, when Stella turned up. "Mum's still in bed," I said, letting her in. "She's been acting really weird, especially in the last day or so. Not just sleeping a lot, other stuff as well. She said something yesterday about everyone staring at her, as if she's too scared to go out. I honestly don't know what to do any more." Stella pulled me into her arms and gave me an enormous hug.
"Don't worry, Becky, my love. We'll soon have her back on her feet. Your mum and I have helped each other through some pretty sticky times in the past, you know. It was so nice to have a cuddle. I snuggled in even closer, breathing in her lovely sunny smell. Can I just ask you something, Stella? What did you mean the other day when you were talking to Mum and you said that I had a right to know? I heard you as I was coming in. She sighed heavily, shaking her head. Then she pulled away, holding me by the shoulders. I'm really sorry, Becky, but it's not for me to tell you that. You'll have to ask your mum when she's feeling a bit stronger. But it's so frustrating. She won't tell me anything about my dad or her life before she left Oakbridge. You don't know what it's like. I can't even imagine how hard it must be for you. But it's really got to come from her. But... She held her hand up. No more buts. Come on. We've got work to do. She grabbed a few things out of the fridge and somehow rustled up an omelette and toast and some freshly squeezed orange juice, laying it all out nicely on a tray. It's so much better to tackle things on a full stomach, she said, winking at me. That's what I always say to my Mac. Not that he needs much encouragement. It was weird hearing her talk about Mac. I couldn't stop thinking about the other day, wondering if he'd call. Wondering what he meant when he said we had all summer. Are you coming up, then? Said Stella, heading for the stairs. I shook my head. I didn't want to hang about to see if Mum was up to tackling things, as Stella put it. As soon as she disappeared up the stairs, I slipped out to see Rosa May. Nothing much happened over the weekend. Rosa May wouldn't say anything else about her big plan to make the summer last forever, just that she was working on it. We didn't spot the silver-studded blue, but neither did anyone else. Stella came by a lot. She did some shopping and cooked us some proper meals, singing along to the radio at the top of her voice. And Mum spent most of the time in bed, sleeping. But Stella said that was okay, that she needed to build up her strength. I loved it when Stella was there, busy in the kitchen, dancing around as if she was at a disco. It was the only time the house felt like a proper home. I was dying to know if Mac had told her we'd been swimming together. I nearly blurted it out a couple of times, but I was worried she might discuss it with Mum. I must have checked my phone about 500 times an hour, hoping that he'd text me. I replayed our afternoon at the pool over and over, analysing every word, every look, trying to work out if he liked me, or if he'd only suggested we hang out because Stella had asked him to. On Sunday night, they announced a hosepipe ban on the news. No one was allowed to water their gardens or wash their cars using a hosepipe until further notice. 43 days had passed since it last rained. It was so hot, the motorways were beginning to melt. Mr. Jackson said it was all our own fault for making such a whacking great hole in the ozone layer.
That's what's done it,
he said on Monday morning, as I wandered by on my way to meet Rosa May.
We've only ourselves to blame for not looking after God's planet the way he intended. It's the likes of our Albert I worry about. What sort of state is the world going to be in when he grows up?
I thought about my dad, out there somewhere, trying to look after the environment. I could just imagine him up in the sky, fixing the hole in the ozone layer with a giant plaster, or maybe sewing it back together with a supersized needle and thread. I asked Mr. Jackson if he believed the hole would ever shrink or disappear, but he shook his head as if it was far too late to put things right. I didn't hear from Mac until later that day. He'd spent the weekend with his dad at some out-of-town racing track, and he wanted to know if I'd go swimming with him the following morning. I said yes without thinking. I was going to suggest we'd do something else, anything else, but I was so excited he'd called, the words were out of my mouth before I could stop them. I still didn't really get why he was so keen to hang out with me. Maybe Rosa May was right, and he was just bored because it was the summer holidays and there was nothing much else going on. We arranged to meet outside the Jacksons at 10.
"I haven't forgotten what you promised last time,"
he teased, just before we said goodbye.
"About putting your feet down."
My tummy tightened.
"That was last time," I muttered. "I'm not promising anything." I talked non-stop all the way to Farnsbury. I think it was nerves. Not just about swimming, but the fact that we were going by ourselves this time. It somehow felt more like a date. I told him about the wildlife photography course I'd done at my old school, and how I'd been spending loads of time at the butterfly garden. It's such a beautiful place. I've been able to take some great shots, and my friend Rosa May and I have been searching for a very rare butterfly called the silver-studded blue. She's a brilliant swimmer, actually, I babbled on. She does all these crazy stunts in the water, but they scare me half to death. I didn't know what I'd do if we actually bumped into Rosa May. She'd be so upset that I was seeing Mac behind her back and going swimming with him.
"You'll be doing stunts soon,"
said Mac.
"You're my star pupil, don't forget."
"Your only pupil," I reminded him, laughing. "And I will not be doing any stunts." The leisure centre still felt familiar, but not quite in the same eerie way as it had the other day. The smell was just as bad and the noise was deafening, but I suppose I was more prepared. I stood in the reception area, looking around, searching for clues, anything that might explain why I was so sure I'd been there before. The trouble was, it was just a feeling, not a proper memory that I could catch hold of. Mac didn't waste any time chatting or showing off his brilliant butterfly stroke like last time. It was straight down to business. As soon as we were changed and sitting on the side of the pool, he jumped into the water and then turned back towards me, clasping me under the arms and lowering me in with him. So I was clinging onto him with my legs around his waist like before. It was cold and scary, and I had to stop myself from squealing like a baby. I started to tremble all over, but I wasn't sure if that was because I was in the water or in Mac's arms.
"Don't let go," I said, my teeth chattering. "I am going to put my feet down, but you've got to swear you won't let go of me straight away."
"I swear," said Mac seriously. "I'd cross my heart, but if I did, I might drop you."
We stood there bouncing for a bit longer, and then screwing up all my courage, I took the deepest breath and uncurled my legs from around Mac's middle. It was the strangest feeling. Like being in space. My legs floated up, and I had to push them down against the water, feeling for the bottom of the pool with my feet. Very slowly, I released my grip on Mac's shoulders.
"Look, Mac, I'm standing," I gasped. "I can't believe it. I'm actually standing up on my own in a swimming pool."
The bottom of the pool felt solid and safe. Not how I'd imagined it at all. Mac smiled and held my hands, and we faced each other, bouncing slightly.
"Now for lesson number two," he said, grinning.
"What do you mean? This is lesson number two."
He shook his head.
Standing on your own was the end of lesson number one. Lesson number two involves bunny hops."
"What?"
"Bunny hops," he repeated. "We're going to bunny hop across the middle of the pool and back again."
"No way! I don't want to. I'm getting out."
I turned towards the steps, trying to drag Mac with me.
"Hey, calm down, Becky. We'll get out in a minute, but first of all, we're going to hop. It's not proper swimming. It's just hopping, like a rabbit."
"Like a rabbit? Rabbits don't even like water," I stuttered, my teeth beginning to chatter again.
But Mac wasn't listening. He was pulling me towards him, hopping backwards, so that I had to hop forwards if I wanted to keep hold of his hands. We went all the way across to the other side, and then Mac turned me round and we came back, bouncing along like a couple of bunnies. I concentrated very hard, holding on to his hands as tightly as I could. Especially in the middle, when the sides seemed a million miles away.
"How impressive is this?" cried Mac. "A week ago, you'd never set foot in a pool, and now look at you. You'll be swimming the channel next."
"Me? Swimming the channel?"
"Well, maybe not swimming it, but you could always try hopping across. They'll make a program about it. Becky hops the channel. You'll be famous."
I don't want to be famous, I said, laughing. Not for hopping at any rate.
We'd just about got back to where we started when Mac let go of one of my hands to wave at someone walking along the side of the pool towards us. I grabbed hold of him, terrified he was about to swim off.
Don't panic, it's just my dad.
As the man got closer, I could see he was tall and broad, with very short brown hair. He was wearing a blue tracksuit and a blue and red baseball cap.
This is Becky, said Mac. I'm teaching her to swim. Becky, this is my dad, Colin.
Colin crouched down by the side of the pool.
Hello, Becky,
he said.
It's nice to see you again after all these years.
What do you mean? I stammered. I've never met you before in my life.
Of course you have,
he laughed. I froze, still holding on to Mac. It was as if all the noise had been sucked from the air until the only sound I could hear was my heart slamming against my ribs.
In fact, the last time I saw you, you were right here in this pool, clinging onto your dad and looking just about as scared as you do now.
Chapter 15.
It was lucky Mac was holding me, because everything started to spin.
I haven't got a dad, I whispered. I've never met him. You must be mixing me up with someone else.
Colin looked confused. He shook his head, rubbing his chin.
It was a long time ago, Becky. You were only a toddler.
It wasn't me,
I repeated very slowly, as if he was stupid. But somewhere deep inside, I think I knew it was me. It didn't make sense, but then nor had anything else since I'd arrived in Oakbridge. Mac seemed just as confused as his dad. He lifted me out of the pool, and I sat on the side in a puddle of cold water, my arms wrapped around my knees.
I've got to go, I said. I've got to go straight home.
My teeth were chattering so badly I could hardly speak. Mac pulled himself out of the water and hurried round the pool to get my towel. Colin followed him, and when he caught up, they stood there talking, their heads close together. I watched them from where I was sitting. Mac shifted from one foot to the other, shrugging with his palms up. He glanced back at me and shrugged again. They talked for another minute, and then Colin strode off, disappearing into an office at the side of the pool, through a door that said Staff Only. I don't know how I managed to get changed. I was shaking all over, and I couldn't make my arms and legs work properly to get my clothes on. How could Colin know me? How could he have seen me with my dad? It had to be a mistake. Either that or Mum had lied to me about everything. I'd spent most of my life trying to find out why my dad wasn't around. But it felt much safer, suddenly, to imagine he'd been off in the rainforest, fixing the planet, rather than right here at Farnsbury Leisure Centre.
What was all that about? Said Mac when I came out to the front. Are you okay?
I nodded. It's just that my mum left Oakbridge before I was born. Well, that's what she's always told me, that I never met my dad. But now I'm not so sure.
Well, my dad says he's certain he remembers you when you were a little girl, but he refused to say anything else. He didn't mean to upset you, Becky.
I know it's not his fault. I just need to talk to my mum.
We wandered down the road to the bus stop.
What are you going to do? Said Mac. Are you going to tell her what he said?
I really want to, but it's complicated. My mum's been in such a state since she walked out on her job, and there's other stuff.
I hesitated, biting my lip. Mac was so easy to talk to, but I didn't want to pour out my entire life history. We were supposed to be having a laugh, but it had all turned so heavy.
Well, I definitely think you should tell her, said Mac quietly. When my mum and dad broke up, they tried to hide things from me because they thought it would be for the best, that I wouldn't notice what was going on. But I just ended up thinking it was all my fault, and that they were splitting up because of me.
But why would my mum say she left Oakbridge when she was pregnant with me if she didn't? Why would she lie about that?
Well, I don't have a clue, said Mac. But whatever the reason, it's always better to know the truth.
I repeated that one line to myself all the way back to Oakbridge. It's always better to know the truth. It's always better to know the truth. I said it so many times it stopped making sense. It was just a string of random words. Mac chatted away, telling me all about his mum and dad getting divorced, about how Colin used to stay out late every night and see other women, and about how he owed money to loads of different people. But it was impossible to concentrate. I knew I had to ask Mum the truth, but it suddenly seemed as if the truth might be so totally unbelievable. It would be like walking through a door into a completely different world. I left Mac outside the Jacksons and ran down to the butterfly garden to try and clear my head before I went home. I remembered what Rosa May had said when I told her about finding the photo, that if Mum had managed to keep a baby secret for so many years, she might be keeping all sorts of other secrets from me too. She was waiting for me at our special shady spot, holding a long daisy chain.
"Look what I made for you, Becky," she called out as I ran towards her. "It took me ages and ages. It kept breaking."
She jumped up to fasten the chain around my neck. I could feel her breath in my hair. It was such a relief to see her.
"How's your mum today? Is that why you're so late?"
I nodded, turning round to give her a hug. "She's worse than ever, and you were right. She's hiding all sorts of stuff from me. Stuff that happened years ago when I was a little girl. I had to be careful. I couldn't tell her about Colin, or she'd know I'd been swimming with Mac. I hated keeping it from her, but I couldn't face another scene."
"You haven't told her about finding the photo, have you?"
I shook my head.
"No, I haven't said anything. Not yet."
"What do you mean?
Not yet. Are you planning to ask her about it, then?"
"Not about the photo. Not while she's in such a fragile state. But I do want to know about my dad." I blinked back tears. It was beginning to sink in. Colin had actually seen me with my dad. If he was right, if he really had seen us together at the pool, then my dad must have left after I was born, not before. Suddenly it came to me, flashing in front of my eyes like a massive neon sign. Mr. Jackson's crossword clue from all those weeks ago. To cast away, leave or desert, 7 letters, first letter A. It was abandon. A needle of pain pierced deep into my heart. My dad had abandoned me. I thought about how I'd scratched my name into the windowsill the night before we moved, just in case. The real reason I'd been so desperate to leave my mark, clinging to the hope that he was out there, searching for me, when he'd probably known where I was all along. Rosa May was stroking my hair.
"Does your mum ever talk about the past at all?" she said. "Has she told you anything about her old life in Oakbridge?"
"Not really," I said, feeling shaky. "I mean, I know she met my dad here when she was really young, and that she was best friends with Stella, but that's it." I stood there in Rosa May's arms, feeling weak, as if my muscles had turned to water. I didn't know if it was the shock or the heat or both of them combined. I just wanted to lie down in the grass and go to sleep until everything was back to normal.
"I hate your mum," said Rosa May suddenly, spitting the words out like bullets.
I pulled away, shocked.
"What do you mean? You don't even know her."
She turned scarlet, her face burning up. I think it was the first time I'd ever seen her embarrassed.
"I know enough," she said. "It's a small village, Becky. People talk."
"What people? What do you mean?"
"Just people," she muttered, and then jumped up before I could ask her what she was talking about. "I'm going for a swim if you want to join me," she called over her shoulder.
But I shook my head, more confused than ever. Rosa May was the closest friend I'd ever had, but sometimes it felt as if I didn't know her at all. I left the garden while she was still swimming. I knew she'd be upset,
but I was determined to talk to Mum, and I had to get home before I lost my nerve. I'd asked her about my dad so many times, but I wasn't going to let her wriggle out of the conversation or twist things round this time. I'd tell her what Colin said, and then, when she was feeling stronger, I'd tell her I'd seen the photo. I needed to know about the past, about what happened before I was born, however difficult it was. Mrs. Jackson was standing in the doorway of the shop, holding a baby in her arms.
"Come and meet our Albert," she called out. "He's 5 months old today."
Albert blew a raspberry and buried his face in Mrs. Jackson's shoulder.
"Oh, he's so sweet," I cried,
reaching up to stroke his head. It was smooth and soft like velvet. "Thank you for the invitation to the christening. I'll definitely be there, and hopefully Mum too." Her face broke into a smile.
"Oh, that's lovely. At least it'll be cool in the church, eh?"
She shifted Albert round so he was facing me.
"Are you feeling okay, Becky?
You're ever so pale."
"I'm fine. I'm just a bit tired," I said, anxious to get home. I tickled Albert under the chin, and he reached for my finger, squeezing it tight.
"He's got a grip of iron for such a little thing," said Mrs. Jackson.
"How's your mum getting on, by the way? Has she had any luck finding a job?"
"No, not yet. There doesn't seem to be much around. I should be getting back to her, to be honest. She's not feeling too good at the moment."
Mrs. Jackson nodded sympathetically.
"Send her my best, won't you?"
Mum was sitting in her usual place, sorting out the green section of the puzzle. She'd finished the poppies over the weekend and had moved on to the fields.
"Look at this," she said as I came in. "It's impossible. I'm trying to separate the pieces, but they're almost identical. I never realised there were so many similar shades of green."
"Mac's dad, Colin, said he's met me before, when I was a little girl."
My hands flew up to my mouth, but it was too late. The words were out.
"I'm trying to do the dark green first," said Mum,
as if I hadn't spoken. She didn't even turn round.
"I don't think you understand quite how tricky it is."
"Are you listening to me, Mum?
Stop going on about the stupid puzzle, can't you? Did you hear what I said about Colin?"
"I could tell you some things about Colin," said Mum,
pressing her fingers to the sides of her head.
"He's not to be trusted. He's a terrible liar. Leaving him was the best thing Stella ever did."
"Mum, I don't care about Colin and Stella and their marriage. Colin said the last time he saw me at the pool, I was with my dad."
"What do you mean, the last time he saw you at the pool?"
She whipped round to face me, her eyes blazing.
"Tell me you haven't been at the pool, Becky. Why were you there? You haven't been swimming, have you?"
She was doing it again, her usual trick.
"Stop it! Stop twisting things round! So what if I've been swimming? He says I was a toddler, and that I was with my dad. My dad, who, according to you, I've never met."
I was shouting now, waving my arms about.
"Why have you lied to me? You've lied about everything. You said he left before I was born."
Mum's face was bright red. She pulled at her top, as if it was too tight round her neck.
"Becky, I..."
She slumped forward suddenly, holding her head in her hands. I should have stopped. I should have realised she couldn't cope. But I was keyed up and angry and desperate to know the truth.
"And that's not all!" I screamed, running out of the room. I tore up the stairs, unable to stop now I'd started.
I crawled under Mum's bed, reaching for the box.
"I know!"
I yelled as I flew back down the stairs.
"I know about the photo!"
Chapter 16.
I raced back into the kitchen, holding the box out in front of me, ready to bring everything into the open. But Mum wasn't sitting at the table anymore. She was lying collapsed in a heap in the middle of the floor, and she wasn't moving. I dropped the box and ran to her side, grabbing a tea towel to put under her head. Her body was in a funny position, twisted up with her legs jutting out at a weird angle.
"Wake up, Mum! Come on, please, wake up!"
I grasped hold of her shoulders to give her a shake, but she was too heavy.
"Mum!"
I shouted in her ear, but she didn't even flinch. I tried to remember what you're supposed to do when someone collapses. We did this first aid thing at school once, about airways and breathing, but I couldn't get it straight in my head. I shook her again. Her face was horribly red and puffy.
"Wake up, Mum! Wake up! Just please, wake up!"
She groaned slightly, and her eyelids fluttered. I leapt up and ran out to the hall to call an ambulance.
"My mum's collapsed,"
I said as soon as someone answered, and then I burst out crying. I don't know how I got out the address or gave any proper details. I was sobbing so hard. The woman kept telling me to take deep breaths, and she stayed on the phone until the ambulance arrived, talking in this slow, calm voice. She asked me my name, and if I was alone with Mum, and if there was anyone they could call, but I couldn't work out the answers. Everything happened very fast after that. The ambulance men rushed in, put an oxygen mask over Mum's face, and then lifted her onto a stretcher, asking me loads of questions at the same time. Her name, her age, what she'd eaten, if she'd been drinking or taking any medication. The questions went on and on as we climbed into the back of the ambulance. I tried to explain that it was all my fault, that I'd found a box under her bed and it was supposed to be a secret, and that I'd asked about my dad. I said a whole load of other stuff about swimming and Mac and lying to Mum. The words came tumbling out, mixed up and confused. I couldn't stop. There was a nurse in the back. She told me her name was Pam, and she put a heavy blanket round me and cuddled me close. "You've had a nasty shock, Becky," she said, stroking my hair. "Everything's going to be okay now, you'll see." As soon as we got to the hospital, they whisked Mum away on a trolley. I tried to follow, but Pam pulled me back. She said I had to stay with her until Mum was sorted. She led me into the main waiting area and handed me a cup of sweet tea. It was in one of those polystyrene cups and burning hot. "Have a few sips of this. The sugar will help with the shock, and then we'll see about getting someone to look after you." She kneeled down in front of me. "Do you have a number for your dad, Becky? Is he at work?" I shook my head. "My mum looks after me. It's just me and Mum. It's always been me and Mum." Pam stood up, sighing. "Okay, my love. I'm just going to pop over to the desk for a minute and make a few phone calls." I sat there trembling all over. I couldn't believe I'd been so stupid. I should have listened to Rosa May. She was right all along. She said Mum wouldn't be able to cope. Why hadn't I kept my mouth shut? I could see Pam at the reception desk. She was on the phone, but she kept glancing over. I picked at the edges of the cup, wondering who she was talking to. I was still sitting there when Stella came bursting through the doors. I don't know how they found her, except I think I might have said something about her being Mum's friend when we were in the ambulance. I jumped up and ran into her arms. It was such a relief to see someone familiar.
"Where is she, Becky?"
she said, holding me tight.
"What happened?"
"It was all my fault," I sobbed. "I found this box under her bed, and her head was hurting and..."
"Hey, come on, calm down. It is not your fault. I don't want to hear you say that."
She cut my face in her hands.
"None of this is your fault, Becky. None of it. Do you understand?"
I stared up at her, nodding. She wiped away my tears and gave me another hug.
"I'll go and have a chat with Pam. Tell her I'm here to look after you, and then we'll find out how Mum is, okay?"
We had to wait ages for any news. But eventually the doctor came out to tell us that Mum was okay. He said she was very weak and that her blood pressure was sky high, but that she'd soon be back on her feet.
"We're going to keep her in for a day or two and run some tests. I'm not expecting to find anything too serious."
He reached out and ruffled my hair.
"I hear you're to be commended for your quick thinking, young lady. Calling the ambulance and looking after your mum until it arrived. She's lucky to have a clever girl like you.
I just stared at him. I wasn't clever. I was stupid. Whatever Stella said, Mum had only collapsed because of me and my big mouth. I wasn't going to say another word. Not to Mum or Stella or the doctors. I wanted to know the truth more than ever. I was desperate to know. But there was no way I was going to confront Mum again.
I'll be staying with Becky for a few days until her mum's up and about, Stella was saying to the doctor. I've spoken to my ex-husband, and he's happy to have my son until Tracy's well enough to come home.
The doctor glanced at Stella over my head.
Could we have a quick chat before you go? I just need to tie up some loose ends, if that's okay.
They walked off to the side, their heads close together. Pam came over from the desk to wait with me. Can I see my mum now? I asked in a small voice. She smiled.
You can pop up for a second, but you mustn't wake her if she's sleeping.
Mum was sleeping. She was lying in a big metal bed, attached to lots of wires and tubes. She looked small and fragile, like she could slip away at any moment, and no one would even notice. I leaned over the bed to kiss her cheek, but she didn't move. I'm so sorry, Mum, I whispered. I'm sorry I shouted at you and called you a liar. I didn't mean it. I turned round to Pam. Are you sure she's okay? She's so still.
She's fine, said Pam firmly. Really? Let's get you home now, Becky. You'll be needing a rest too.
I smoothed Mum's hair off her face and kissed her cheek again. I'll make it up to you, I promise. Just get better, please. It was awful going back to the house with Stella. I was too scared to go in at first. I kept imagining Mum collapsed on the floor in the middle of the kitchen, lying in that horrid, twisted-up position. The first thing I did was put the box back under her bed. I didn't even look inside. I was sorry I'd ever found it in the first place. Stella tried her best to be cheery and bright, but it wasn't the same without Mum there. She bustled around the kitchen making toast and tea, but just the smell of it made me feel ill. I tried to force some food down, but my throat was clogged up. If only I hadn't said anything. If only I'd sat down with Mum and helped her with the puzzle, or done the washing up, or...
Come on, Becky, eat up. You got to stay strong for your mum.
I just keep thinking of her all alone in that big metal bed. What if she wakes up and I'm not there? She'll be worried about me. We've never been apart before, not even for one night. Stella reached for my hand across the table.
The nurses will tell her where you are, love. They're looking after her really well. I know it all seems bleak and hopeless tonight, but everything will seem brighter in the morning. I'll nip back from work at lunchtime and take you up to see her. I promise.
I sat up in bed for ages that night, trying to work things out in my head, all the different pieces of the puzzle. Mum said it was the new job that brought her back to Oakbridge, that it was supposed to be this great opportunity. But why did she leave Oakbridge in the first place? Was it my dad? Did he do something to her? Is that what she meant about everyone knowing? And who was the baby in the photo? Something drove her away, and something brought her back. And apart from Mum, there was only one other person who knew the whole story, and that was my dad. I woke up feeling groggy, like I was lost in a thick fog. I had the tightest knot in my stomach, but it took me a few moments to remember why. Downstairs, the kitchen was sparkly clean, and Stella had left me a note by the jigsaw puzzle, saying she'd see me at midday. It was nearly 10 already, but if I left straight away, I'd have just about enough time to get down to the butterfly garden to see Rosa May. It was already warm out, but misty, as if the whole of Oakbridge was trying to keep secrets from me. I started off walking, but as I got nearer to the garden, I felt scared suddenly and broke into a run. The knot in my stomach was worse, like something terrible was about to happen, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. I swear I could hear Rosa May calling for me. But somehow the faster I ran, the longer it seemed to take. I spotted her as soon as I arrived. She was lying face down in the middle of the lake, her arms and legs spread out in the shape of a star. I raced across the field, calling her name and waving my arms. She must have heard me coming, because she started to swim towards the side. But then, just before she reached me, she disappeared under the water. She was showing off, or punishing me for leaving without saying goodbye the day before. I watched for her, my eyes fixed on the surface, counting in my head, holding my breath. I should have been used to her trying to scare me by now, but it got to me every time. I scanned the lake, searching for some sign she was there, but it was completely still. Come on, Rosa May, come on. My phone buzzed suddenly, making me jump. It was a text from Mac. I heard about your mum. Are you okay? I didn't know what to text back. I still wanted to see him, so much, but I felt weird after what had happened at the pool with Colin, really embarrassed.
Hey!
It was Rosa May.
What are you doing?
I switched off my phone and slipped it back in my pocket as she pulled herself out of the lake. My mum's in hospital, I gabbled, grabbing her arm. I called her a liar. I tried to show her the photo, but she collapsed. It was awful, Rosa May. She was just lying there on the floor in the middle of the kitchen. I was certain she was dead. I didn't tell the doctor or Stella, but that's what I thought when I saw her. My legs felt as if they were going to give way. I sank down into the grass, dizzy and short of breath. Rosa May stood over me.
Why the hell did you do that? She spat. I told you what would happen. Why didn't you listen to me?
I don't know, I said, shrinking back. I just wanted to find out the truth. There are so many secrets. It's driving me mad.
How is she now? Is she going to be okay?
I nodded. The doctor said he's running some tests, but she should be coming home today or tomorrow at the latest. Stella stayed last night, and she's taken me up to the hospital at 12. I'll have to get going in a sec. Rosa May looked stricken.
Don't go yet. You've only just got here.
She sat down next to me in the grass.
Hey, you'll never guess what happened yesterday after you left. There was this woman here with her two children, and they said they'd spotted a silver-studded blue. It was the big news of the day. Everyone was talking about it.
I don't believe you. My palms were clammy suddenly. I couldn't bear it if someone else had spotted the silver-studded blue first, not with Mum so ill in hospital. It was only an old wives' tale, a stupid myth, but I couldn't help feeling that if I was the first to spot the silver-studded blue this summer, then I'd know for sure that my dad was on his way home to see me, and I needed him now more than ever before.
It's true, said Rosa May. They took photos and everything. You should have seen Maggie and Jean. They were beside themselves with excitement. But in the end, after all the fuss, it wasn't a silver-studded blue at all. It was an Adonis blue.
How do you know? My voice was shaking. Did you see the photos? Are you sure?
Positive. The Adonis blue is similar, and it's really beautiful. But it's not that rare. I've seen loads.
So you mean we still might find the first silver-studded blue?
We are going to find it first. I promised, didn't I?
She laced her fingers through mine, squeezing tight.
I never break my promises, Becky. You should know that by now.
We lay back in the grass together, gazing up at the sky. It was warm and peaceful and safe. Rosa May stroked my hair and murmured to me in a soft, hypnotic voice. I tried to sit up a few times, but she pulled me back down into the grass. I was so tired after everything that had happened. There was so much I didn't understand. My eyes started to close. If I stayed right here, I might spot the first silver-studded blue, and then I'd know my dad was on his way home to put things right, to help my mum get better. I could feel my worries float away, melting into the early morning mist. As I drifted off to sleep, I thought I heard Rosa May say,
"There's no need to go anywhere now, Becky. This is where you belong, right here in the butterfly garden."
Chapter 17.
I woke up drenched in sweat. My mouth was dry, and it was difficult to swallow. I knew without looking at my watch that I was late. I could tell by where the sun was in the sky. I dragged myself up. I had to get to the hospital to see Mum. I looked around for Rosa May, but she'd gone. I wish she'd woken me before she left, but she probably thought I needed the sleep after everything that had happened. It seemed to take forever to get back. Stella was outside the cottage, leaning against the car with her phone in her hand.
"Becky! Where were you?" she called out. "I've left loads of messages. I was really worried."
I ran up to her.
"I'm so sorry, Stella. My phone was turned off. It's not too late to go, is it? I really need to see Mum."
"No, it's fine. Come on, we'll pop up now and find out what's going on."
She got in the car and reached across to unlock the door on my side.
"Why did you disappear like that, Becky? I know you're upset about your mum, but I keep telling you, it's not your fault."
"It wasn't that. I just went to see my friend to tell her what happened, and we were lying in the grass talking and I dropped off to sleep. I was so tired. I hardly slept last night. Please don't be cross, Stella. I didn't mean to worry you." She rolled her eyes, grinning.
"Of course I'm not cross. I'm not in any great hurry to get back to work, so you've done me a favour, really."
We drove on for a bit in silence. I glanced at Stella. She was such a good friend to Mum, and she'd been so lovely to me. But I knew at some point she'd have to go home to Mac. I wasn't joking when I'd said to Pam yesterday that it had only ever been me and Mum. Having Stella around, singing and dancing, cooking proper meals and cleaning up afterwards, normal stuff like that, made me realise just how lonely my life with Mum could be.
"I've been thinking about my dad,"
I blurted out suddenly. My mouth was so dry that the words felt sticky, as if they were coated in glue. "Do you think he'd ever look after me, if Mum was too weak to manage, or if she had to stay in hospital for a long time? He's a conservationist, you know," I added. Stella smiled, but she looked sad.
"I know he is," she said, "and I know your mum doesn't like to talk about the old days. But he was a lovely man, your dad."
"Really?" I stared at Stella, amazed. "Do you mean that?" My eyes filled with tears. "I was sure he must have done something awful to Mum, hurt her in some way, and that's why she left him."
"Not your dad," she said quietly. "He wouldn't hurt a fly. He was the sort of man who would take an injured bird home in a box and nurse it back to health."
"That's like me," I whispered. "I love animals too."
Stella nodded. "I know, sweetheart. You're just like him, in lots of ways."
I tried to take in what she was saying. I had so many questions, so much I wanted to ask her. But we'd arrived at the hospital.
"Does he still live in Oakridge?" I said quickly. "Do you know where he is? Do you ever see him?"
"No, my love. He left the village a long time ago. But if you want to know anything else, you'll have to ask your mum. I've said far too much already."
Mum seemed so much better. She was sitting in a chair by her bed with a cup of tea, leafing through a magazine. Her eyes lit up as we came in, and I rushed over to give her a hug.
"You look great," I said. "Have they told you when you can come home? Is your blood pressure down? Oh, you won't believe how clean the kitchen is. It's sparkling. But we haven't touched the puzzle, have we, Stella? We left that for you."
Stella laughed.
"Don't bombard her, Becky. How are you, Trace? You gave us quite a scare."
"I'm feeling much better," said Mum. "To tell you the truth, I don't actually remember much about what happened. It's all a blur. I know I finished the poppies, and that I was just about to make a start on the field. And then the next thing I remember is waking up here, wired up to all these machines."
"Are you serious?" I said. "You mean you don't remember anything else?"
"Not at the moment, but the doctor said it might come back."
I kneeled down by the chair, resting my head on her lap while she chatted to Stella. I hoped her mind would stay blurred forever. I didn't want her to remember a single word of what I'd said to her. The box was back under her bed, and I was never going to mention it again. I was desperate to find out about my dad, especially after what Stella had said in the car. But I wasn't going to ask Mum, not while she was so ill. Rosa May was right. Some secrets were better off left alone. We were only there for a bit, when a nurse came bustling in and asked us to leave. I was sure they'd let her come home with us, but they said they wanted to keep an eye on her for one more night, just in case. Mum got quite teary, clinging on to me and begging me not to leave her. "Come on, Tracy," said Stella firmly. "You're upsetting Becky. We'll come and get you tomorrow. It's only a few more hours." I gave her one last hug and ran out of the room before I started crying myself. I still felt as if I was to blame, whatever Stella said. We went back up the next morning, but it took ages to sort everything out. I started to wonder if they'd ever let her leave. She had to have her blood pressure checked again, and then there were prescriptions to sort out, and all these forms to sign.
"She needs lots and lots of rest," the doctor said,
while Mum was in the other room with the nurse.
"I'd like to see her back here at the beginning of next week, but any headaches, and she's to come straight back in."
"Oh, don't worry," I said. "I'm going to look after her. I'll do all the shopping and cooking and keep the house clean. She won't have to lift a finger."
"I'm sure you'll do a splendid job," he said. "But you're very young to be caring for your mum. Are there any other family members who might be able to help out?"
He paused, looking over my head at Stella.
"I'll be stopping by every day," she said quickly, "to look after Tracy and Becky. I'm as good as family, aren't I, Becky?"
I edged towards the door, nodding. "I'll just go and find Mum now," I said, anxious to leave. I didn't want him to think we couldn't manage. The doctor bent his head close to Stella's.
"I also suggested to Tracy that she go to her GP and ask for some counselling and maybe some medication for depression,"
I heard him say quietly.
"She's very low, and I think it might be helpful for her to talk to someone."
A wave of frustration rolled over me. Mum might need to talk to someone, but it was me she should be talking to, not a counsellor. I was so grateful to Stella for telling me about my dad. But I had even more questions now. If he was such a lovely, gentle man, why did he leave us? And why did Mum find it so difficult to talk about him? I couldn't ask her, not after today. I only wish she felt able to tell me herself. I hardly left the house over the next few days. The furthest I went was down to the Jacksons to buy milk and other bits and pieces we needed. Mrs. Jackson had heard about Mum being in hospital, and she'd been busy cooking. The first day I dropped by, she'd made us some scones with homemade jam, and there was a delicious apple pie about to come out of the oven.
"I was baking anyway, what with the christening coming up, so a few more scones weren't going to make any difference."
We were sitting in the kitchen behind the shop. It was small and hot and filled with the smell of buttery apples. The windowsill was crammed with tomato plants and 5 jars of strawberry jam, with pretty red and white checked cloths covering the lids.
"We heard the ambulance arrive," Mrs. Jackson went on, bending down to check on the pie.
There was a sudden burst of heat as she opened the oven door, and my eyes started to water. She peered at me anxiously.
"You must have had an awful shock, Becky, seeing your mum like that. Are you sure you're okay?"
"I know how hard it is when Mr. Jackson's poorly."
"I'm fine," I said. "Really. Mum's happy to be home, and Stella's been helping out loads." Mum was happy to be home, to begin with. She made an effort to stay up the first evening, and we had a nice supper together. She even promised to come to Albert's christening when Mrs. Jackson dropped the scones round. But by the next morning, her mood had plunged back down, and it was a struggle to get her out of bed. She spent most of the following few days sleeping, and when she did manage to get up, the only thing she seemed interested in was the puzzle. She'd sit at the table for hours, holding one tiny piece in her hand and moving it from place to place, trying to work out where it should go. She said it helped to take her mind off things. But I began to wonder if maybe the doctor at the hospital was right. and she did need to see a proper counsellor. Mac tried to get in touch a couple of times, but I couldn't face talking to him or going for any more swimming lessons. I didn't even go to the butterfly garden to see Rosa May. I was far too scared to leave Mum by herself. I knew Rosa May would be hurt. She wouldn't understand. I could almost hear her voice in my head, demanding to know where I was. But there was nothing I could do. The days dragged by. It was hot and stuffy. I was tense, churned up, waiting for something to happen. It was like Mum was there, but not there. I don't think I'd ever felt so alone. At night, I sat in my airless room on my bed and wrote letters to my dad. I had no idea where he was or where I could send them, but I wrote them anyway. They were all slightly different, but the basic message was the same. Dear Dad, it's me, Becky. I know you're off somewhere fixing the world, but please could you come home for a while and help me to fix my mum? As the week went on, Mum seemed to shrink more and more inside herself. She was weighed down with sadness. I did everything I could to cheer her up, but it didn't make the slightest difference. I'd chat away, making plans, trying to involve her, but she'd stare right past me, as if I wasn't there. I was just about to admit to Stella that I couldn't cope on my own any more, that I needed help, when the day for Albert's christening arrived. And that's when everything changed forever.
Chapter 18.
We'd been living in Oakbridge for exactly 5 weeks on the day of Albert's christening. I woke up early and lay in bed, thinking about Rosa May. I hadn't seen her for days, but the longer we were apart, the more I could hear her calling for me, as if we were attached by some sort of invisible thread, and she was drawing me back to the butterfly garden. It was already too warm in my room. I went into the bathroom and splashed cold water on my face. It helped, but only for a moment. They said the temperature was expected to reach over 35 degrees later on, the hottest day so far. Mum had promised she'd come to the christening when Mrs. Jackson dropped the scones round, but when I went in to wake her, she wouldn't budge.
"I've got a splitting headache, Becky. It came on last night and it's killing me."
"You'll have to go back to the hospital if you've got a headache," I warned. "You know what the doctor said." Mum slid further down the bed, groaning.
"Not the hospital, please. I'll be fine in a bit. I just can't face the christening, that's all."
I didn't like to push it, not after last time. It didn't surprise me, really. Mum's never been keen to go to church. She says she lost her faith years ago, but it's another one of those things she doesn't like to talk about. The christening was due to start at 11:30, followed by lunch in the church hall. I had a shower and put on my nicest outfit, a dark purple sundress, with matching purple pumps, and the necklace Mum bought me that day she went shopping with Stella. There wasn't much time, but I decided to slip down to the butterfly garden before I set off for the church. I couldn't bear to let another day pass without seeing Rosa May.
"What a pretty dress,"
said Maggie when I got to the garden.
"Are you off somewhere nice?"
"I'm going to a christening. It's for Mrs. Jackson's grandson, Albert."
"Oh, how lovely,"
said Maggie, clapping her hands together.
"Well, you look a treat. You really do."
I smiled, thanking her, then ran straight through to the little shop and out into the garden. Joan didn't bother stamping my hand any more. I think she just assumed I'd be coming and added me to her list of visitors. It took me a while to find Rosa May. She wasn't on the bridge or in the lake. I thought I saw a flash of blue just beyond the bridge, but when I got across to the other side, there was no sign of her. I sat down for a minute to catch my breath. It was unbearably hot, and I could feel my dress sticking to me like melted toffee. I was just about to give up and go when suddenly she was there, wrapping her arms round my neck, laughing in delight. Maybe she'd been watching me all along.
"Finally," she cried. "I've been waiting forever."
I jumped up to give her a hug. "I know. I'm sorry. My mum's been really ill. She's back from the hospital, but I was scared to leave her on her own."
But what about me? I've been on my own too. It's been awful. I'd almost given up hope.
She stepped back from me, looking me up and down.
Why are you wearing that lovely dress? Where are you going?
Her eyes narrowed.
You're not meeting that boy Mac, are you?
No, of course not. I'm going to a christening. Hey, you don't want to come with me, do you? I said, excited suddenly. I'm sure Mrs. Jackson wouldn't mind. The invitation was for me and Mum, but I couldn't get her out of bed this morning. And we'd have so much fun if we went together. Rosa May snorted.
What? Go to church on a beautiful day like this? You've got to be joking.
She grabbed my hands, hyped up and jumpy.
Don't go either, Becky. You don't have to, do you? Why don't you stay here with me instead? They said it's going to reach nearly 38 degrees today, and the hotter it is, the more likely we are to spot the silver-studded blue.
I shook my head, sighing.
I can't. Mr. and Mrs. Jackson will be upset enough that Mum's not going.
Rosa May pushed me away suddenly.
Why did you bother coming here, then?
She snapped.
You keep doing that. You turn up, and then you leave straight away. Don't you want to be my friend any more, Becky? Is that it? Is that why I haven't seen you for days?
Don't say that. Of course not. I told you, it's my mum. I couldn't come because of my mum.
But you're not worried about leaving her today, are you?
She sneered.
You're quite happy to go off to this christening or whatever it is. Don't you think you'd better stay at home if you're that concerned about her? I'm so sick of your stupid excuses.
I wanted to explain, to put my point across, but I felt dizzy again, as if my head was filled with fluff. Every time I saw Rosa May lately, we ended up arguing. I didn't have the strength to fight with her anymore. I am worried about my mum. But I didn't want to upset Mrs. Jackson. And I'm here, aren't I? She didn't say anything. She was watching me, waiting.
Look, I'll come tomorrow, first thing, and I'll stay all day, I promise. Cross your heart and hope to die,
she demanded, her eyes glittering. I'd never seen her this angry. It was like she couldn't bear it unless she had me all to herself. I backed away, nodding.
Cross my heart and hope to die.
The church was packed. Mr. and Mrs. Jackson were standing at the doors, greeting people and guiding them to their seats. Mrs. Jackson looked lovely. She was wearing a pale pink dress with a matching hat, and she'd got Mr. Jackson into a suit.
She's forced me to wear a tie, he said, winking at me. In this heat. I'll be slipping it off as soon as the service starts.
No, you will not,
said Mrs. Jackson, wagging her finger at him.
Well, where's your mum, Becky? Couldn't she make it?
She's got a headache, I said. She's really sorry.
Not to worry.
Pop yourself over there by Stella and Mac.
I looked across to where she was pointing. Stella was all glammed up in a bright multicoloured dress and a hat with a massive feather, but my eyes were drawn to Mac. I'd only ever seen him in shorts and a T-shirt, or in his swimming gear, but today he was wearing smart grey trousers and a white shirt with the sleeves rolled up. His arms were strong and tanned, and the thought of him holding me in the pool made my face burn up. He turned round suddenly, as if he could sense me watching, and waved me over.
"You look nice,"
he said, shifting up to make room.
"Purple really suits you."
Stella laughed.
What a charmer. I don't know where he gets it from.
How are you, Becky? How's Mum this morning?
Not so great, I said, tearing my eyes away from Mac. She's got a headache again, but she didn't want me to call the hospital. I think she might need to talk to someone. I looked down at my hands. You know, someone, professional. Stella took hold of my hands and squeezed them.
Don't worry, my love. She's got her follow-up appointment tomorrow afternoon. I'll take her up there and speak to the doctor myself. We'll soon get her sorted.
I wanted to ask her how we were going to do that, how we were ever going to get her sorted. But just at that moment, Father Hill appeared at the front of the church, and everyone stopped talking. The christening only lasted for about half an hour. There were some prayers and some singing, and then Albert's mum and dad brought him up to the front. He was wearing this frilly white dress, and Father Hill poured water on his head, blessing him in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Albert cried a bit, and so did Mrs. Jackson, but you could tell she was chuffed to bits. I liked Father Hill straight away. He was quite old, and even though he'd probably done a million christenings before, he put so much feeling into the service. He had this big, booming voice that echoed around the church, but there was something gentle about him, especially the way he was with Albert. "He seems nice," I whispered to Stella. "Really kind. Maybe he could talk to Mum." Stella shook her head.
"I think we'd be better off discussing it with the doctor, especially if she's still getting headaches."
When the service was over, we all trooped next door to the church hall for sandwiches, cake and tea. Father Hill was standing with Mrs. Wilson, greeting people as they came in. I wanted to talk to him, but not with Mrs. Wilson there. I only wanted to say that I'd enjoyed the service, and that I might try to come the following Sunday, but she was giving me the evils again, staring at me as if I had three heads. I remembered what Mac said about her performing exorcisms, and I shrank back, wondering why she always looked at me like that.
"Let's get some cake," said Mac,
steering me away from Mrs. Wilson and towards the food.
"Mrs. Jackson easily bakes the best scones in Oakbridge."
"I know. She brought some round this week." We helped ourselves to scones and cake and found somewhere to sit. Neither of us said anything for a bit. It was the first time I'd seen him since that day at the pool, and I could feel it hanging between us, making things awkward. I was dying for him to crack a joke, go back to the way he was before, but he was fidgety and restless.
"Look, I'm sorry about the other day," he said in the end,
not quite meeting my eye.
"You know, what my dad said and everything. I wish he'd kept his mouth shut. To be honest, I could see how much it shook you up."
"It's okay," I said, embarrassed. "He was only saying what he thought was true."
"Did you tell your mum in the end?"
I nodded, swallowing. "It was awful. I shouted at her. I called her a liar, and then I ran out of the room to get something, this photo. And when I came back in to show her, she was on the floor, unconscious. That's why she ended up in hospital." He leaned forward.
"What was the photo of?" he asked.
I rubbed my hands on my dress. They were slick with sweat. I knew I could trust Mac. He was so nice, but I still found it difficult to say the words out loud. I breathed in deeply. "A baby. My mum, in hospital, with a baby. It was taken 12 years before I was born, so I know it wasn't me. But I'm pretty sure it's a little girl, because she's wrapped in a pink blanket. The thing is, my mum's never mentioned her."
"Wow."
Mac opened his mouth and closed it again.
"That's crazy, Becky. Are you sure it's her baby?"
I held out my hands, shrugging.
"I don't know. I think so, but I don't know for sure."
Suddenly, a thought that had been niggling away at the back of my mind popped into my head. "And that's not all. Ever since we've been back in Oakbridge, things have been really strange. Like this note came through the door, asking to meet me. It was weeks ago now. I thought it was from my dad, but then your mum said he left Oakbridge years ago. So now I'm not sure who it was from, or if it was even for me." Max sat for a minute, taking it all in.
"Listen," he said slowly, "I know your mum's not well, but I really think you need to ask her about all of this. Show her the photo and the note. Find out who the baby is. It might even explain why your dad left Oakbridge."
"I can't, Mac. You don't know what she's like. She's so secretive, and she's scared. What if she collapses again? I'd never forgive myself."
"I know it's risky, but seriously, Becky, you can't just pretend you never found it."
We were still talking when Mrs. Jackson came over with Albert. She was cradling him in her arms, showing him off to everyone.
"Wasn't he a star?" she cried. "I thought I was going to burst with pride. Look at his little face. Isn't he a picture?"
"He's gorgeous," I said, stroking his hand. "It was a lovely christening, Mrs. Jackson, and the scones are delicious."
"Thank you, Becky, my love. I'm so pleased you could come. Have you met Father Hill?"
She turned round just as Father Hill was making his way over to us.
"This is Becky Miller, Father, Tracy Miller's daughter," she said, introducing us.
"It's a pleasure to meet you, Becky," said Father Hill.
He smiled warmly, as if he really meant it.
"I hear your mum's been feeling poorly. I do hope she makes a speedy recovery. It must be so difficult for her, especially being back in Oakbridge after all this time. My heart goes out to her. It really does."
He moved on to greet someone else before I could say anything. Mac's eyes met mine. He grabbed me by the arm, blew kisses at Mrs. Jackson and Albert, and dragged me out of the hall.
"What on earth did he mean by that?"
he hissed as soon as we were outside.
"Why would it be difficult for your mum to be back in Oakbridge?"
"I don't know. I keep telling you I don't know anything. She says she came back to Oakbridge because of this great new job she was offered. But that's rubbish. There's another reason, I'm sure of it."
"I asked my mum, you know," he said.
I stared up at him, holding my breath.
"After I got back from the pool that day. I asked her what my dad meant when he said he'd met you before, but she wouldn't tell me. She said it was up to your mum to tell you when she was ready."
I breathed out, disappointed. "Well, that's not about to happen any time soon, is it?" We stood there in the blistering heat. I could tell Mac was hatching a plan. I could almost hear him thinking.
"The photo," he said finally. "You need to look at the photo again when your mum's not there. See if there are any clues. Something you missed the first time you saw it."
I shook my head, frowning. "I can't. It's in a box under her bed. How am I supposed to get it? She spends practically every waking moment in her room these days. It's never going to happen."
"Yes, it is," said
Mac, clearly pleased with himself.
"Tomorrow afternoon, when my mum takes her up to the hospital."